actually know what to do in a crisis, depending on what the crisis is. And so people know that when all you have is a hammer, everything is a nail, and that that's not effective. And we also have to remember that, particularly around this mental health crisis piece, we are in a larger mental health crisis right now. You know, we know the stories of Muhammad Ba and Daniel Prude and Walter Wallace. And these are recent cases where families called for help. You know, they called for an ambulance, or they called to get some mental health support for someone having an emotional health episode, and the police come and kill them. These are real families and communities, and people recognize, you know what? I'm actually being duped here. I'm left with a solution that's not a solution. It doesn't work. And no one is talking about the alternative, because I actually picked up the phone to call for help. I called for care, and instead what I got was cops. So the solutions are named by activists, and that is growing. It's spreading, because it also just speaks to what people know. People know that in their heart. Sometimes, even on my own block, I have a neighbor who has mental health episodes, and we send out around an email to the block association saying, don't dial 911 because they might come and kill her.
Well, I thank you very much. And I just want to ask you, finally, there's kind of a conversation happening about whether we're saving journalism or whether we're serving people's information needs. And I'm loving that paradigm shift, because it's like, are we trying to stave up existing institutions just because they're existing institutions? Or do we want to actually have a vision of things being different? And do we want to look at the needs those institutions say they're serving and talk about other ways to meet those needs? So there's a conversation even about reporting that is about some of these same questions. And I just wanted to ask you, journalism is a public service. You know, corporate media is a profit-driven business, but journalism can be a public service. And I wonder what you think reporting could do to help propel this forward-looking movement forward. What would good journalism on this set of issues look like to you?
Good journalism would have to be brave journalism. Some of the things that we see when it comes to reporting on police violence, when it comes to reporting on deaths in prisons, or, you know, torture, solitary confinement, false imprisonment, is that all of a sudden journalists lose, you know, it's almost like, did you take writing? I mean, passive voice, when it comes to state violence, it makes my skin crawl. I mean, it speaks to the anxiety and the fears of the individual reporter, you know, to not name a thing, you know, police kill 14-year-old instead of 14-year-old dies, you know, that would be rejected by my English teacher if I wrote it. How are we all of a sudden not these brave truth tellers and storytellers? So one of the things that we really do need is like a level of integrity when it comes to state violence. And we find very few outlets and very few journalists, you know, stick to that regardless of where they lean on the subject or how they feel overall about prison and policing abolition. But just to say, this thing happens to this family, to this individual, and the perpetrator is this person, and they are in the police department. And the reason why we were always taught not to use the passive voice, because it does alter one's feeling about what you're saying about the incident, right? Is it going to just walk down the street and die? That's going to make me feel a lot different when you articulate that they were killed, and this person was killed by this other person or this entity or this institution. And then we have to just really figure out how to separate the money, you know, because I think a lot of that fear, a lot of that lack of bravery of reporting has to do with the fact that this is how we get paid, or this is how our institution, you know, we talk about corporate media, this is how we stay on the air, or this is how we keep the papers printed, is that we are owned by someone who'd be very upset if we were too truthful about this. I'm also really excited about community-based reporting, some podcasts that I've seen emerge where people are telling the stories of their communities in the voices of members of the communities, you know, like really reporting self-determination, so to speak, emerging that I've been listening to. I think these are all really important ways to counter what we're seeing in corporate media where it seems like it's just the story is twisted in a pretzel to support that as well.
We've been speaking with Monifa Bandele, activist with the Movement for Black Lives. You can find the report that we're talking about, Perspectives on Community Safety from Black America, at m4bl.org. That's m4bl.org. Thank you so much, Monifa Bandele, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
We can argue that with gerrymandering, Citizens United, and the power of money, and even the Electoral College, one person, one vote is not the simple recipe for fully participatory democracy that we might wish. Still, voting, voting rights, voting access, is the definition of a keystone issue that shapes many, many other important issues. So how and why have voting rights become a contested field in a country that, as I say, has democratic aspirations? And what can we do? What are we doing about it? We're joined now by Savante Myrick, president of People for the American Way and former mayor of Ithaca, New York. Welcome to Counterspin, Savante Myrick.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it. And all of us here at People for the American Way appreciate the chance to talk about this issue.
Wonderful. Well, let me just ask it simply. What are currently the chief impediments to voting rights that you see that have led you to say it's up to us to march again, or that have led Senator Raphael Warnock to talk about democracy in reverse? What are we up against?
I wish I could tell you that, hey, you know, there are simple, small fixes. There's a challenge in a country of 360 million people making sure ballots arrive on time. I wish I could tell you that there was a bureaucratic or technocratic problem. But the truth is, it's something more akin to a war in which one half of the American political spectrum, that half that is beholden to extreme MAGA Republicans, is set out to intentionally disenfranchise people of voting. And they really have not been more plain spoken about this at any time since the 60s, since George Wallace, and since the KKK. There was a time where both sides agreed that voting is good and everybody should have a right to vote, especially after the 2020 election led by Donald Trump. State legislators, people who are not household names, folks that, you know, you won't often see on CNN or MSNBC, state legislators are taking the cues from Donald Trump and passing dozens and dozens and dozens. I just came from Utah, where yet another law was passed that makes it harder to vote. Utah used to have very good voting laws. Everybody got a ballot in the mail. You could just fill it out, send it back in. You had weeks and weeks to do it. They just repealed that. Why? Is it because Donald Trump lost Utah? No, it's because the state legislators are trying to curry favor with a president that just frankly does not want everyone's vote to count. Mm-hmm. And if it's okay, if I just say what probably is obvious to many of your listeners, but I think it deserves to be said, they're not trying to take away everyone's right to vote. Mm-hmm. They're trying to take away certain people's right to vote. I'm a Black American, and I just know for a fact that this Trump-led faction of the Republican Party would love for Black Americans' votes not be counted. And I know that because they are moving with almost surgical precision to disenfranchise people like me and my family.
And then we see it also coming, you're talking about a kind of top-down motivation, and then we see it also at the Supreme Court, you know, and listeners will know about Shelby County versus Holder in 2013, but there were serious impacts from that as well.
You know, we here at People for the American Way, we're fighting really hard at every state legislature, at every level, to make sure people have a right to vote, because we think if you can't choose your own leaders, then nothing else matters, as they say. If you can't choose from the menu, then you're what's for dinner, right? And that is about voting rights, and it's about the voting laws. But as you mentioned, the Supreme Court, it's also about money. It's about money in politics. And if a few wealthy billionaires can throw their weight around, as we're seeing now, and extort university presidents and donate unlimited amounts of dark money to whatever shady person that they like, because of whatever deal they've made behind closed doors, then we don't live in a true democracy anyway. And so when the Supreme Court made its Citizens United decision, it allowed that corporations with people and money with speech, and that money and speech should be unlimited, they really put us on a dark path, one that we're still living with today. So we are also here at People for the American Way fighting to get money out of politics, to overturn Citizens United, but also to pass things like matching funds for elections and the stuff that make it easier for people, frankly, like me, people who grew up without a lot of money, folks who were not the sons of senators, folks who are not in the pockets of big corporations, to run for office and to win.
Despite what we've just said, or in part because of it, I am surprised when people are surprised that people don't vote. You know, while I lament it, I see the fact that some people just don't see a connection between this lever they pull and the policies and laws governing their lives. I see that as an indictment of the system and not of the people. And so I wanted to ask you to talk about what we've seen labeled low propensity voters and different responses, like what People Four is talking about, responses that are better than saying these people are so dumb they don't even know how to vote their own interests.
And that's so well said. You know, certainly our system has failed in many ways. But extreme right-wingers have also been waging an 80-year war, maybe longer, to convince Americans that government does nothing for them, that their representatives don't improve their lives. And so when they do things like starve schools and school budgets, starve road budgets so that there are potholes in the street, and try to shrink government down to a size where you can drown it in a bathtub, they make sure it is dysfunctional. From Reagan to George W. Bush to Donald Trump, they break the system and then say, hey, see, government, it can't work at all. Why bother? Why bother to vote at all? And so I think it is good to remind yourself that for the average American who is not listening to CNN or MSNBC all day, first of all, they're probably happier, their blood pressure's lower, but that they've also been subject to generations of misinformation about the power of collective action and how much better their circumstances, their lives, the quality of their life, the health of their finances could be if we lived in a country that took more collective action. Like we see, frankly, in some Scandinavian nations where folks really trust that the power of their vote is going to lead positive progressive change.
Well, is there legislation or are there moves afoot that could be responsive or would be responsive to the suppressive efforts that we're seeing? Are there things to pull for in terms of policy?
Yes, absolutely. So if people go to peopleforthemericanway.com, you could see all of the work that we're doing at each state legislature. Now, of course, fighting state by state is an inefficient way to do this. The best way to reclaim our own democratic power is to pass federal legislation, what we call the For the People Act, that would make it easier for people to run for office, easier for people to vote, easier for people to have their voices heard. We're also fighting at the federal level to overturn Citizens United. This is a complicated and lengthy process to overturn a Supreme Court decision, but you can do it. We are well on our way, and we encourage people to join us.
Well, finally, let me ask you about journalism. Certainly, we see all kinds of problems with election coverage, you know, from ignoring down ballot races that we know can be critical to sort of focusing on horse race and heavy-handed polling, almost everything but candidates' actual plans for what they would do and how that would affect us. But coverage of voting rights is not the same as election coverage, but I just wonder, certainly election coverage gives an opening to talk about those issues. Are there things that you'd like to see more or less of from media?
For sure. Yes. And you just listed a whole host of them. Including, you know, honestly, the constant coverage of polling does have a suppressive effect on the vote. Because people, when they just listen and follow the polls, they sort of feel like the vote already happened.
Right.
At least they feel like they know what's going to happen. Why bother? We're down two. We're up four. They don't need my vote. It's already done. So that's one problem. The media can help people understand that all this harping about elections and voter disenfranchisement is not dweeby and nerdy. It can seem it a little bit. It's like in my family, I was the one that always had the rule book for Monopoly. And I was like, you can't do that. The rules are important. Do not pass go. And other people are like, I don't want to talk about the rules for how we decide this stuff. I just want my streets to be better paved, right? I think if the media could help folks understand that he who makes the rules determines the outcome. Whatever it is you care about, whatever it is you're voting for, if it's for better health care, if it's for peace in the Middle East, if it's for more money for you and your family, if it's for a better quarterback for the New York Giants, finally, whoever sets up the rules of the game can help make sure that their outcome is more likely. And Republicans know that, frankly, better than Democrats do. The Republicans have turned their entire apparatus not into improving people's lives, but into taking away their right to vote, so that as soon as they have total power, as they do in places like Tennessee, for example, they can start expelling lawmakers that they don't like. They can cut corporate taxes basically to zero, and they can abandon the poor and the middle class. And they do all that by making it harder for people to vote first.
And we won't know what we've got till it's gone. Yeah. We've been speaking with Svante Myrick. He's president of People for the American Way. Svante Myrick, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find shows and transcripts on our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Opening the vaults on over 100 years of recorded music history. Welcome to Cruisin' the Decades, Global Edition. One song per decade, 100 years of music in 1 hour. Produced and hand-selected by Brad Savage in the studios of WAPS-FM, The Summit, in Akron, Canton, Youngstown, Athens, Ohio, USA. Presented in this special global edition on the greatest independent radio stations across planet Earth on shortwave via the super-powered Radio Miami International, WRMI in Okeechobee, Florida. on channel 292 shortwave from Rohrbach, Germany, heard across Europe and Northern Africa, and on the 500 kilowatt WBCQ The Planet in Monticello, Maine, on the Canadian border, on FM and AM via broadcast signals all across North America and planet Earth. Get ready to go cruising through 100 years of popular music. This is a journey through music history from someone with a rather ridiculous record collection. Here's your host for Cruising the Decades, Brad Savage.
Brad Savage. Ready, get set, go. Jump into the cruising time machine. We'll do one song per decade and 100 years of music. All styles welcome, all genres welcome. I'm Brad Savage. This is episode number 99. CruisingTheDecades.com. On today's show, None of Your Business with Butterbeans and Susie in 1927, plus a UK disco soul group from 1977 covers Ann Peebles. And the Dominoes, early 50s R&B, another very risque song in the early building blocks of rock and roll music. And the UK band The Stone Roses makes a big debut in 1989. But we'll begin with a little pomp and circumstance circa 1911. This is an early recording of one of the most famous British patriotic songs of all time. It is sung by Dame Clara Butt. The song was written in 1901 by Edward Elgar. And you probably know it in America and around the world for graduation ceremonies and educational events. In Britain, it is often used at sporting events and other large gatherings of people. In America, we know the instrumental version mostly, but here's an early recording with lyrics, "The Land of Hope and Glory." Once again, this is Dame Clara Butt from 1911, and it's on Cruisin' the Decades.
Oh!
hear the improvements in recording technology and the evolution of musical styles of popular music through the decades and beyond. Over 100 years of music, this is the global edition of Cruisin' the Decades, broadcast worldwide on AM, FM, and shortwave.
That I'm a chump, and the wool pulled over my eyes.
Now, I wonder who woke you up.
But I'm gonna know somewhere for. Yes, sir, you gonna tell me somewhere. You stay out night till 3 and 4, and come home leaping drunk.
That's my business.
Then come to bed and turn your back. Sue, you know that's the bunk. Yes, sir, now listen here, Sister Kate. Now tell Papa who's keeping you out so late.
Say, listen, butter.
Let me hear.
I don't mean to cut you short, and I ain't putting on air.
What's wrong with you?
But I've got my 2 hands full, minding my own affairs. Now I wouldn't answer questions if I know I had to die. So don't keep asking, cause I don't want to lie. You can't make me tell you so, it's no use to try. Furthermore, ain't none of your doggone business.
Oh yes, that's my business, let me straighten you out. Now look here, woman, you must have lost your mind. You must got religion and you don't mind dying. When you talk language I don't understand, you drumming up business for the graveyard man. I'm as jealous of you, woman, as a man can be. Sue, you know you done put that thing on me. You getting colder towards me every day. Now tell me what's making you act that way.
I got tired of steering home, just sitting there watching the clock.
Now what's wrong with that?
Sometime 'twas after 4 GM when you put your key in my lock. When I was a good woman, you done everything you could to make me think I was nothing but an old chunk of wood. Now I'm doing what I please, you can tell the neighborhood what I do. Ain't none of your doggone business.
Cruising the Decades, music appreciation, the sounds of history come to life. That was Butterbeans and Susie from 1927. Almost more of a comedy skit, really. Tain't none of your business. Butterbeans and Susie were the married in real life comedy duo, Jody and Susie Edwards. Well known for early vaudeville and the minstrel songs, and that's just one example of a deep catalog of interesting listening. Cruisin' the Decades is one song per decade, and we really try to mix it up nicely. A lot of different sounds and styles represented, and we do a full century of music in a one-hour show. I'm Brad Savage. Up next is a song from Lil Hardin Armstrong, a jazz pianist and singer, composer, and band leader. She was also the second wife of Louis Armstrong. They collaborated on a lot of recordings in the 20s, and she continued a pretty steady career into the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Let's take a listen to this fun number. This is Doing the Susie Q. This is Lil Hardin Armstrong, 1936, on Cruisin' the Decades.
After amassing an absurd record library that takes up his entire basement, host Brad Savage decided to share over 100 years of music with the world. From super-powered shortwave broadcasters via internet streaming and on the top independent community and music radio stations across North America and the world, this is Cruisin' the Decades, 100 Years of Music.
He won't come back. Old Doc Jack, he won't come back. Old Doc Jack, he won't come back. He wouldn't do a lick of work. Well, I wouldn't smoke. He wouldn't drink. Sit all day and pretend to think. He washed his feet in the kitchen sink. Just another lazy jerk. Well, now he knew the answer to almost everything. He had a cure for cancer and a curse for swing. Old Doc Jack, he burned the shack. Old Doc Jack, he burned the shack.
Old Doc Jack, he left today, went to California.
In the decades, 100 years of music. That is Will Bradley and his orchestra and Ray McKinley on vocal, Old Doc Yak from 1940. Will Bradley came out of New Jersey and was a part of Red Nichols and his Five Pennies early on, and later the Ray Noble Orchestra, and even spent a year or two doing the Ed Sullivan Show in the 1940s as the studio band. They have a lot of fun and silly, humorous numbers. Old Doc Yak refers to a comic strip that dates back to the 1900s and 1910s. A lot of the Will Bradley recordings today are fairly obscure, but some really fun listening. Cruise in the Decades, where we pick out one song per decade, and we go for over 100 years of music, from the 1920s to the 2020s. CruisinTheDecades.com. I'm Brad Savage, and let's go into the early R&B formative years for rock and roll. This is a particular favorite era and favorite genre for this show and for me personally. And I love the double entendre and the very risque lyrics. And a lot of the R&B songs were so controversial, but yet tame by today's standards, or not. I mean, listen to this one. This is pretty in your face, 1951 or otherwise. This is a well-known formative building block of what would become rock and roll. This is the Dominoes from 1951. This is 60 Minute Man on Cruisin' the Decades.
Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you don't believe I'm all I say, come up here and take my hand. When I let you go, you'll cry. Oh, yes, he's a 60-minute man. There'll be 15 minutes of kissing. Then you holler, please don't stop.
Don't stop.
There'll be 50 minutes teasing and 50 minutes squeezing. 50 minutes of blowing my top. If your man ain't treating you right, come up and see your dad. I'll rock 'em, roll 'em all night long. I'm a 60-minute man.
60-minute
man.
Call him.
The loving band. I'll rock, roll all night long. I'm a
60-minute man,
60-minute man, they call me
Lovin' Dan.
I rock 'em,
red man.
There'll be 15 minutes of kissing. Then you holler, please don't stop. There'll be 50 minutes of teasing, and 50 minutes of squeezing, and 50 minutes of blowing my top. Baby, old man ain't treating you right. Come up and see old Dan. I'll rock 'em, roll 'em all night long. I'm a 60-minute man, oh yeah.
An audio journey, song by song, through every genre of popular music and recorded music history, from swing, jazz, folk, and blues, and the Great American Songbook, to punk, new wave, garage, and alternative. This is the global edition of Cruisin' the Decades with Brad Savage. 100 years of music, one song per decade.
I don't mind. With my girl, that's fine. I know them all pretty well, but I know sometimes I must get out in the light. Better leave her behind with the kids are all right. The kids are all right.
It was 1966. The kids are all right here on Cruisin' the Decades. One song per decade and 100 years of music. It's kind of like musical anthropology. We're studying the sounds of the past. You can find all of our playlists at cruisinthedecades.com. You can listen to every show we've ever done on demand at cruisinthedecades.com. I'm Brad Savage, broadcasting from the Summit FM in Akron, Ohio, USA. Our show is heard around the world on great radio stations and broadcast outlets like KMSU, The Maverick, from Minnesota State University, Mankato. And at WSDP 881 The Park, the student station in Plymouth, Canton, Detroit, Michigan area. We're also heard on The Gamut, serving our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., via thegamut.fm and HD Radio Broadcasting. And welcome to our newest station, AFN's Joe Radio, on the Armed Forces Network and the AFN Go app, heard worldwide, broadcasting at all U.S. military bases and all U.S. embassies around this great planet Earth. It's Cruising the Decades, and in 1977, a British disco group came out with their biggest hit, Eruption. Their song, I Can't Stand the Rain, which is a cover of an Ann Peebles tune from a few years earlier. Eruption on Cruisin' the Decades.
I can't stand the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories.
Eruption, our 1970s selection for Cruisin' the Decades. Now, the original song was 1973 by Ann Peebles, but you know who else did that song? Graham Central Station did that song. There's a version by Lowell George of Little Feet, and Tina Turner sang that song too. So we're drawing musical connections and putting all the songs in perspective, one song per decade, a musical history lesson, a virtual time travel machine. Let's go to England in the late 80s, setting the stage for the 90s alternative sound to come. A highly influential band and first album by the Stone Roses. The band was formed in Manchester, UK, led by vocalist Ian Brown and guitarist John Squire, plus Manny and Rennie on bass and drums. Kind of a hybrid of dance rock and psychedelic sounds and indie music, of the late 80s, this album really made an impact in 1989. This is I Wanna Be Adored by the Stone Roses on Cruisin' the Decades.
The studios of the Summit.fm in Akron, Ohio, USA. This is Cruisin' the Decades with Brad Savage.
Sure.
national breakout album came in 1996. That is the Verve Pipe from Michigan, from East Lansing, Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Central Michigan area, led by Brian Vander Ark, who has done a ton of really great solo material, though the Verve Pipe are still together today, and a few years back, they had a kids and family album. You know, as life progresses, these guys started families, and they did, you know, alternative style kids music. Pretty cool. And they do a handful of tour dates each year to this day. Meanwhile, that frontman, Brian Vander Ark, full-time radio host in Grand Rapids, Michigan now. He is a full-time rock station DJ in addition to the band nowadays. You're listening to Cruise in the Decades. I'm Brad Savage. It is a global journey across the radio dial. We are heard in New Zealand and in Canada, and we are heard on Blue Wave Radio in Roatan, the island of Roatan, Honduras, and we are heard across Europe on channel 292 shortwave from Germany. And we're also on Radio Miami International shortwave from South Florida. That transmits all over the world. And we're on WBCQ The Planet from northern Maine at the Canadian border. So between all of these shortwave stations, we get correspondence from around the world, listeners checking in and giving us reception reports with our shortwave shoutouts. Here's our European correspondent, Martin, in Poland. Shortwave shoutouts now on Cruising the Decades.
We're cruising the decades around the world. Here's Martin with their shout-out show.
You guess it right. Here's Martin, and it's shout-out time. Let's say hello and thank you to some recent listeners. Michelle listens to the show frequently on channel 292, shortwave, listening at home in Civitanova, Italy. Diego in Salamanca, Spain, is again listening to Cruising the Decades on channel 292. Pradeep is a very distant listener all the way from Agartala, Tripura, India, also listening on channel 292 shortwave. We have two recent listeners in Germany. Detlef is in the location of Bad Pyrmont, Germany, and also Chris, listening from Marl, Germany. Both are tuned in on channel 292 shortwave. And we have our first listeners in Belgium. Mark tunes in from City of Torot, Belgium, also on channel 292 shortwave. Hector is tuned in from Uruguay. He is located in Maldonado, Uruguay, and has listened via broadcast on WRMI Radio Miami International. Thank you, guys. It's amazing to think of all the places the music of Cruising the Decades is enjoyed. We want you to go to cruisingthedecades.com to submit a song request or listening report. You can also write directly to show hosts on brad@thesummit.fm.
And now, back to our studio in Akron, Ohio.
That's our super shortwave European correspondent, Martine, who started as a listener of this show. She happens to have some background in film and editing and radio. And so now she produces our shortwave shoutouts, cruisingthedecades.com. And into 2007 now. We're into the 21st century. Let's go to St. Louis for the band Ludo. So named for the fuzzy, squeezable, lovable character in The Labyrinth with David Bowie and Jim Henson's production work. That's where Ludo gets their name. They do a handful of reunion shows each year, usually around Halloween. They had a heyday in the 2000s and 2010s. And this album in 2007 is called You're Awful, I Love You. And if you have a copy and you look closely at the liner notes and the thank yous, you'll find the name Brad Savage, me, and all the radio stations I had worked at, because I happened to know these guys on their way up to stardom and supported them along the way, got my name into the liner notes on the CD. And so all these years later, now we're playing them on Cruise in the Decades. It's a full circle moment with Ludo. This is Love Me Dead on Cruise in the Decades.
Love me cancerously, like a salt sore soaked in the sea. High maintenance means you're a gluttonous queen, narcissistic and mean.
Me for a